Beecher nodded back. It looked that way. He shook his head to clear it. It just made the pain worse. Stalemate. Even if he could fire first, the guy might still get a shot off. With his finger tense on the trigger like that and the gun hard in her side, the pulse of death would probably be enough to do it. It was too much to risk. He kept the stire where it was and stood up slowly and pulled his shirt tail out and wiped his face with it, all the time squinting one eye down the barrel. The guy took a breath and stood up too, hauling Jody with him. She tried to ease away from the pressure of the gun, but he kept her pulled in tight with his right arm. He turned his elbow outward and the hook pivoted and the point dug in against her waist. "So we need to deal," he said. Reacher stood and mopped his eye and said nothing. His head was buzzing with pain, buzzing and screaming. He was beginning to understand he was in serious trouble. "We need to deal," the guy said again. "No deal," Reacher replied. The guy twisted the hook a little more and jammed the revolver in a little harder. Jody gasped. It was a Smith & Wesson Model 60, 2-inch barrel, stainless steel, 38 caliber, 5 shots in the cylinder. The sort of thing a woman carries in her purse or a man conceals on his body. The barrel was so short and the guy was digging it in so hard, his knuckles were hard up against Jody's side. She was hanging forward against the pressure of his arm, her hair was falling over her face, her eyes were looking straight up at Reacher, and they were the loveliest eyes he had ever seen.
"Nobody says no deal to Victor Hobie," the guy snarled.
Reacher fought the pain and kept the stire steady and level on the guy's forehead, right where the pink scars met the gray skin.
"You're not Victor Hobie," he said. "You're Carl Allen, and you're a piece of shit."
There was silence. Pain was hammering in his head. Jody was staring harder at him, questions in her eyes.
"You're not Victor Hobie," he said again. "You're Carl Allen."
The name hung in the air and the guy seemed to recoil away from it. He dragged Jody backward, stepping over the corpse of the thick-set guy, turning her to keep her body between himself and Reacher, walking slowly backward into the dark office. Reacher followed unsteadily with the stire held high and level. There were people in the office. Reacher saw dimmed windows and living room furniture, and three people milling around, the fair-haired woman in the silk dress, and two men in suits. They were all staring at him, staring at his gun, and the silencer, and his forehead, and the blood pouring down onto his shirt. Then they were regrouping themselves like automatons and moving towards a tight square group of sofas. They threaded their separate ways inside and sat down and placed their hands on the glass coffee table which was filling the space. 6 hands on the table. 3 faces turned towards him, expressions of hope and fear and astonishment visible on each of them.
"You're wrong," the guy with the hook said.
He backed away with Jody in a wide circle until he was behind the farthest sofa. Reacher moved with them all the way and stopped opposite. His stire was leveled right over the heads of the 3 cowering people leaning on the coffee table. His blood was dripping off his chin onto the back of the sofa below him.
"No, I'm right," he said. "You're Carl Allen, born April 18th, 1949, south of Boston, some leafy suburb. Normal little family, going nowhere. You got drafted in the summer of 1968. Private soldier, capabilities rated below average in every category. Sent to Vietnam as an infantryman, a grunt, a humble foot soldier. War changes people, and when you got there, you turned into a real bad guy. You started scamming, buying and selling, trading drugs and girls and whatever else you could get your filthy hands on. Then you started lending money. You turned really vicious. You bought and sold favors. You lived like a king for a long time. Then somebody got wise, pulled you out of your cozy little situation and put you in country, the jungle, the real war, the tough unit with a tough officer riding you. It pissed you off. First chance you got, you fragged the officer, and then his sergeant. But the unit turned you in. Very unusual. They didn't like you, did they? Probably owed you money. They called it in, and 2 cops called Gunston and Zabrinsky came out to pick you up. You want to deny anything yet?"
The guy said nothing. Reacher swallowed.
His head was hurting badly. There was real pain digging in deep behind the cuts. Real, serious pain.
They came in a Huey, he said. A decent young kid called Kaplan was flying it. Next day he came back, flying co-pilot for an ace named Victor Hobie. Gunston and Zabrinsky had you ready and waiting on the ground, but Hobie's Huey was hit on takeoff. It went down again 4 miles away. He was killed, along with Kaplan and Gunston and Zabrinsky and three other crew called Bamford and Tardelli and Soper. But you survived. You were burned and you lost your hand, but you were alive. And your evil little brain was still ticking over. You swapped dog tags with the first guy you got to. Happened to be Victor Hobie. You crawled away with his tags around your neck, left yours on his body. Right then and there, Carl Allen and his criminal past ceased to exist. You made it to a field hospital, and they thought they were treating Hobie. They wrote his name down in their records. Then you killed an orderly and got away. You said, I'm not going back, because you knew as soon as you arrived anywhere, somebody would realize you weren't Hobie. They'd find out who you were, and you'd be back in the shit. So you just disappeared. A new life, a new name, a clean slate. You want to deny anything yet?
Allen tightened his grip on Jody.
It's all bullshit, he said.
Reacher shook his head. Pain flashed in his eye like a camera.
No, it's all true, he said. Nash Newman just identified Victor Obie's skeleton. It's lying in a casket in Hawaii with your dog tags around its neck. Bullshit,
Allen said again.
It was the teeth, Reacher said. Mr. and Mrs. Hobie sent their boy to the dentist 35 times to give him perfect teeth. Newman says they're definitive. He spent an hour with the x-rays, programming the computer. Then he recognized the exact same skull when he walked back past the casket. Definitive match.
Allen said nothing.
It worked. For 30 years, Reacher said, until those two old people finally made enough noise and somebody poked around. And now it's not going to work any longer, because you've got me to answer to.
Allen sneered. It made the unmarked side of his face as ugly as the burns.
Why the hell should I answer to you?
Reacher blinked the blood out of his eye over the unwavering stare.
A lot of reasons, he said quietly. I'm a representative. I'm here to represent a lot of people. Like Victor Truman Hobie. He was a hero. But because of you, he was written off as a deserter and a murderer. His folks have been in agony 30 long years. I represent them. And I represent Gunston and Zabrinsky, too. They were both MP lieutenants. Both 24 years old. I was an MP lieutenant when I was 24. They were killed because of what you did wrong. That's why you're going to answer to me, Allen. Because I'm them. Scum like you gets people like me killed.
Allen's eyes were blank. He shifted Jody's weight to keep her directly in front of him, twisted the hook, and jammed the gun in harder. He nodded. Just a fractional movement of his head.
Okay. I was Carl Allen, he said. I admit it, smart guy. I was Carl Allen, and then that was over. Then I was Victor Hobie. I was Victor Hobie for a real long time. Longer than I was ever Carl Allen. But I guess that's over now, too. So now, I'm gonna be Jack Reacher.
What?
That's what you've got, Allen said. That's the deal. That's your trade. Your name for this woman's life.
What? Reacher said again.
I want your identity, Allen said. I want your name.
Beecher just stared at him.
You're a drifter. No family, Alan said. Nobody will ever miss you.
Then what?
Then you die, Alan said. We can't have two people with the same name running around, can we? It's a fair trade. Your life for the woman's life.
Jody was staring, straight at Reacher, waiting. No deal, Reacher said.
I'll shoot her,
Alan said. Reacher shook his head again. The pain was fearsome. It was building stronger and spreading behind both his eyes. You won't shoot her, he said. Think about it, Alan. Think about yourself. You're a selfish piece of shit. The way you are, you're always number one. You shoot her, I'll shoot you. You're 12 feet away from me. I'm aiming at your head. You pull your trigger, I pull mine. She dies. You die 1/100th of a second later. You won't shoot me either, because you start to line up on me, you go down before you're even halfway there. Think about it. Impasse. He stared at him down through the pain and the gloom, a classic standoff. But there was a problem, a serious flaw in his analysis. He knew that. It came to him in a cold flash of panic. It came to Alan at the exact same moment. Reacher knew that, too, because he saw it settle in his eyes complacently. You're miscalculating, Alan said. You're missing something. Reacher made no response.
Right now it's a stalemate, Alan said. And it always will be, as long as I'm standing here and you're standing there. But how long are you going to be standing there?
Reacher swallowed against the pain. It was hammering at him. I'll be standing here as long as it takes, he said. I've got plenty of time. Like you figured, I'm a drifter. I don't have any pressing appointments to get to. Alan smiled.
Brave words, he said. But you're bleeding from the head, you know that? You've got a piece of metal sticking in your head. I can see it from here.
Jody nodded desperately, eyes full of terror.
Check it out, Mr. Curry, Alan said. Tell him!
The guy on the sofa underneath the stire crabbed around and knelt up. He kept well away from Reacher's gun arm and craned his head around to look. Then his face creased in horror. It's a nail, he said. A woodworking nail. You've got a nail in your head.
From the reception desk, Alan said.
The guy called Curry, ducked down again, and Reacher knew it was true. As soon as the words were spoken, the pain doubled and quadrupled and exploded. It was a piercing agony centered in his forehead, an inch above his eye. The adrenaline had masked it for a long time, but adrenaline doesn't last forever. He forced his mind away from it, with all the power of his will, but it was still there. Bad pain, razor sharp and nausea dull, all at the same time, booming and throbbing through his head, sending brilliant lightning strikes into his eyes. The blood had soaked his shirt all the way down to his waist. He blinked and saw nothing at all with his left eye. It was full of blood. Blood was running down his neck and down his left arm and dripping off his fingertips.
I'm fine, he said. Don't anybody worry about me. Brave words, Alan said again. But you're in pain and you're losing a lot of blood. You won't outlast me, Reacher. You think you're tough, but you're nothing next to me. I crawled away from that helicopter with no hand. Severed arteries. I was on fire. I survived 3 weeks in the jungle like that. Then I got myself home free. Then I lived with danger for 30 years. So, I'm the tough guy here. I'm the toughest guy in the world, mentally and physically. You couldn't outlast me even if you didn't have a nail in your damn head. So don't kid yourself, okay?
Jody was staring at him. Her hair was golden in the faint, diffused light from the window blinds. It was hanging forward over her face, parted by the sweep of her brow. He could see her eyes, her mouth, the curve of her neck, her slim, strong body, tense against Alan's arm. The hook shining against the color of her suit, the pain was hammering in his head. His soaked shirt was cold against his skin. There was blood in his mouth. It tasted metallic, like aluminum. He was feeling the first faint tremors in his shoulder. The stire was starting to feel heavy in his hand.
And I'm motivated, Alan said. I've worked hard for what I've got. I'm going to keep it. I'm a genius and a survivor. You think I'm going to let you take me down? You think you're the first person who ever tried?
Reacher swayed against the pain.
Now let's up the stakes a little, Alan called to him.
He forced Jody upward with all the strength in his arm, jammed the gun in so hard she bent away from it, folding forward against the arm and sideways against the gun. He hauled her up so he was invisible behind her. Then the hook moved. The arm came up from crushing her waist to crushing her chest. The hook plowed over her breasts. She gasped in pain. The hook moved up until the arm was at a steep angle, crushing her body, and the hook was resting on the side of her face. Then the elbow turned out and the steel tip dug into the skin of her cheek.
I could rip her open, Alan said. I could tear her face off. And there's nothing you could do about it except feel worse. Stress makes it worse, right? The pain? You're starting to feel faint, right? You're on your way out, Reacher. You're going down. And when you're down, the stalemate is over, believe me.
Reacher shuddered, not from the pain, but because he knew Alan was right. He could feel his knees. They were there, and they were strong. But a fit man never feels his knees. They're just a part of him. Healing them valiantly, holding up 250 pounds of body weight, means that pretty soon they won't be. It's an early warning.
You're going down, Reacher, Alan called again. You're shaking, you know that? You're slipping away from us. Couple of minutes, I'll walk right over and shoot you in the head. All the time in the world.
Reacher shut it again and scoped it out. It was hard to think. He was dizzy. He had an open head wound. His skull was penetrated. Nash Newman flashed into his mind, holding up bones in a classroom. Maybe Nash would explain it, many years in the future.
A sharp object penetrated the frontal lobe here and pierced the meninges and caused a hemorrhage.
His gun hand was shaking. Then Leon was there, scowling and muttering,
"If Plan A doesn't work, move on to Plan B."
Then the Louisiana cop was there. The guy from years ago in another life, talking about his .38 caliber revolver, saying,
"You just can't rely on them to put a guy down, not if he's coming at you all pumped up on angel dust."
Reacher saw the guy's unhappy face.
"You can't rely on a .38 to put a man down, and a short barrel .38, worse still. Hard to hit a target with a short barrel, and with a struggling woman in your arms, harder still. Although her struggling might put the bullet dead center by accident."
His head spun. It was being pounded by a giant with a jackhammer. His strength was draining out of him from the inside. His right eye was jacked open, and it was dry and stinging, like needles were in it. 5 more minutes, maybe, he was thinking. Then I'm done for. He was in a rented car next to Jody, driving back from the zoo. He was talking. It was warm in the car. There was sun and glass. He was saying, "The basis of any scam is to show them what they want to see." The stire wobbled in his hand and he thought, "Okay, Leon, here's Plan B. See how you like it."